Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, Fermentable Planet Earth. Welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And my name is Chris Kuzmi.
And we're co-host of this weekly adventure in all things fermentable.
First off, at the end of last week's episode, we announced what was going to be this week, and that was our Oma Gangster friends from Oma Gang, and we have postponed that episode to September 9th, so that will be on next week. But there are a couple other announcements, same as last week, though. The New York City Brewers Guild is holding its first annual fundraiser. Please come down and support it. Check out the New York City Brewers Guild website at newyorkcitybrewersguild.com to find out more about it. It's at the Well on this Sunday, the 25th, from 2 to 5 p.m. And Mary and I are sharing a beer that we made together as part of the Pillow Talk series of 508 Gastrobrewery.
Yep. So if you come, you'll get to, you get a taste of that.
The Sour Seduction Saison mixed with Lapsang Souchong smoked tea.
Yeah. And then September 8th is Brooklyn Wort. So that is, that link, it will be, it's up on last week's post on our, on fermentaboutit.com. And it will also be tonight's post. So that's September 8th. I believe it's from 1 to 5 at Bell House. It's a great way to taste a lot of really excellent local homebrews. And brooklynwort.com.
That's right.
And then last announcement is Steve Paminski from the Barrage Brewing Company in Long Island has been, he's trying to open his doors. He's a fully licensed nano brewery. He just has to put in a new sewer line.
That's right.
So he is doing a Kickstarter campaign to get his doors open. He's got 48 hours to go, and he's just, he's around $3,000 short at the moment. So Google Kickstarter and Barrage Brewing Company, and we'll post the link. We'll tweet the link later tonight, as well as post it on the website. So please help Steve open the doors, and so we can have another craft brewery on Long Island.
He's a great brewer. It's worth it.
Absolutely. So who do we have for tonight's show, Chris?
Oh, who do we have? My goodness, I'm very excited about today. There's a very good reason we postponed tonight's originally planned episode. Back in February, we talked about the competition that we hosted as part of the New York City Homebrewers Guild, and it was a complete upset. You know, the first three winners, the top three, were not beer at all, and we have tonight, we have Bobby Honeybee, Bob Slanzy, our good friend and dear friend from the Homebrewers Guild, who won with his short pepper, or with his
ghost pepper mead. So you took ghost best of show with your ghost pepper mead.
Yep.
And so you're not only are you an urban beekeeper, but you also do some bee capturing or swarm capturing.
Yeah, I catch swarms and I will cut them out of houses or wherever they take up residence.
And then you also make award-winning meads.
Yes.
So let's start with talking about beekeeping. How long have you been keeping bees?
About 5 years.
About 5 years. And what inspired you to start
it was
keeping
my
hives?
Father's best friend actually inspired me. And he started keeping bees. He found a beehive in a hot water tank, and he was very upset when they died that winter because he didn't know why. So he cut it open, and he was determined to keep bees after that. So his first year keeping bees, he invited me down to give him a hand, and I went down, and I caught the bug.
Oh, wow. How many bees did he have?
He started off with two hives. Now he has about 15. I have about 5 this year.
Wow. Did he make mead as well?
No, he did not.
How did you come to make mead?
I was actually at work one day, and I heard a story of somebody's grandfather who made cider, and they added honey. And I said, hell, I could make that. And I ended up making a cider. I made two ciders, actually, and I went on the web, and I found the Westchester Homebrewers. And that February, I walked into Westchester Homebrewers with two bottles of cider that I made and said, hey, here I am. I'm a beekeeper. This is what I made. I brought some honey, and I met Phil Clark, who was...
Yeah,
and also awesome. An award winning mead maker.
And he said, "Stick with me, kid." even though he's only like 5 years older than me.
But look, before we get ahead of ourselves and start talking about mead, tell us more about bees and what it is to be a beekeeper.
Well, being a beekeeper, there's a whole science to bees. You can be an amateur beekeeper. I consider myself an intermediate beekeeper. Or you can actually go to college and be a master beekeeper. Just because you have a hive of bees in your backyard and you open a hive once a year with the mask on, you're not a beekeeper. You're keeping bees. When you can go into the hive and see what's going on and know what's wrong and look for the diseases, then you're keeping bees. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to be a beekeeper, be a beekeeper 100%. Don't be the guy whose hive is on the news because it's swarmed in the middle of Times Square and there's someone's car with 30,000 bees on it. That's when somebody calls me to come clean them up, and I take them, put them in a box, and I take them home, and I have new bees.
Why would bees do that?
Bees do that every year to propagate, if allowed.
They pick Hondas or, like, you know, Civics.
Yeah, they go for the color. But bees do that every year, and proper hive management would include going into your hive every year and looking for those signs, those swarm cells that the bees are going to swarm. Removal of those swarm cells ensures that your bees are going to stay with you because they won't have a new queen. If they don't have a new queen, they cannot swarm. If you want to make honey, you don't let 60% of your workforce leave. And that's what happens with the bees. You know, the more honey you have, the better off your bees do for the winter.
What are the very basics of beekeeping? Like, what are the first steps? So you have to get some kind of hive, and I know there's different types.
Yeah, there's hives. There's Langstroth, there's Top Bar, there's step hives, the ones that you see on Yogi Bear. Those are no longer allowed by law because it would cause the hive to be destroyed as you extract the honey. But Langstroth is the most basic hive. Top Bar hives, they're an African-style hive. They work very good there, but the production's in a Langstroth hive.
Mm-hmm. And then people, you would order a bee, colony?
You can order a colony. You can order packaged bees. I know there's the New York City Beekeepers Association. Yep. And they do offer classes where you can look them up. I live in Westchester, so I'm really not involved with them. But they do have a great program. There's all sorts of classes you can take. I belong to the Northeast Beekeepers of New Jersey. That's closest to me, so I go over the Tappan Zee Bridge, go to Ramapo College. They have a class every week of 100 people, and we have great speakers all the time, and they offer classes in the spring. And if you're going to keep bees or plan on keeping bees, go to the class.
Yeah.
Really, because you have to have some kind of knowledge in order to have the bees. Just don't order the bees, throw them in a box, and leave them there all year. I've seen too many people do that. And then your bees end up dying because you didn't know what disease they had or... they swarmed and they, you know, the new queen flew out of the hive in her mating flight and was eaten by a bird. So now your hive is destined to die because there's no possibility of a new queen.
Mm-hmm. What, you know, in an urban environment like we're in, is there a size that you should be looking out for? Or if I was in Times Square when that swarm attacked that Honda Civic, you know, how would I get them and propagate them? I saw on Facebook you found some things happening.
Yeah, I found a swarm. I looked for the queen in the swarm, and the swarm is the gentlest stage of bees. So if you see a swarm, you can get actually interested in the bees. They really don't, they're not interested in you. They're interested in finding a new home. Don't get me wrong. If that swarm's been there 5 days and those bees are actively looking for that hive, they might get a little testy, could get stung. But as a beekeeper, I realized that, you know, getting stung is part of the job. It's like being in a relationship without being kissed. It's going to happen. But, you know, the first year I got stung about 50 times, 60 times. I remember I got stung 40 times in one day. That's when I really reconsidered my hobby.
Wow.
But this last year I've been stung 6 or 7 times in my fingers. And considering I've been over 100 hives, I really don't think that's too bad.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. How many hives did you say you had right now?
I have about 5.
You have 5 right now.
Yeah.
And are they all... they're all producing the same kind of honey because of where you live, right?
Yes. You know, the hives, I moved from Yonkers up to Croton this year, and they've seemed to do very well in Croton. There's probably about 300 to 400 pounds of honey I could extract off those hives.
Wow.
I'm going to leave a lot for the winter. A hive requires about 80 pounds for the winter. I would rather leave them a little extra in case we have an extra cold winter, because in the winter, the bees eat all that sugar, and that gives them the energy to... vibrate their wing muscles, to flex their wing muscles, to generate a heat shield around the queen of 93.5 degrees. She's maintained at that temperature all year. Then in January, she starts to lay eggs, and those eggs have to be kept at 93.5 degrees all year. So the more she starts laying in January, the bigger and bigger that cluster gets, and in time, it allows her to lay more and more eggs. There's a huge buildup from January to about June in the hive.
Of the number of bees.
So we can get up to 80,000, 100,000 of larger hives in June. A lot of people say, I use a three-deep system, which a lot of beekeepers don't, and it encourages a larger population.
Three-deep meaning you leave more honey?
Three-deep brood boxes.
Okay, okay.
So my hive is about 29 inches tall.
Okay.
And I leave about 30 frames. Most people leave about 20. I leave 30 frames in for the spring. I figure it's a faster buildup. It leaves more resources, and I get an overall better return.
Mm-hmm. Now, going back to a swarm, when bees swarm, is that the old queen leaving, or is that because the bees have a new queen is about to hatch?
Yes, and that's exactly it. The hive is a collective, decides that they're going to propagate. They'll stop feeding the old queen, royal jelly. She'll lose weight because she's been laying eggs.
Mm-hmm.
She can lay up to double her body weight a day. She eats royal jelly, and that's excreted from the nurse bee's gland in their head. And she eats that royal jelly. Once they stop feeding her, she's going to start losing weight. They want to get her back to flight weight.
Okay.
So it takes about 16 days for the queen bee to hatch. So they'll stop feeding her as soon as they start making a cell for the queen bee. So she's not going to eat for about a week. When she leaves the hive, she's going to take about 60% of her workers with her. And those are the swarms that we see in the newspaper and on the news. And the old queen is going to emerge a day or two later. She's going to hang around for a couple days. Then she's going to go on a mating flight. She's going to mate with up to 20 males and come back. And in 5 days, she'll start laying eggs.
Okay. Now, is that one way that if, as a beekeeper, that you could expand and to add another hive? Is that you allow the swarm to occur and you give them a good home to go to?
Oh, yeah. That you can use bait hive.
Okay.
And you would use lemongrass oil in a box. And, if there was a swarm around, they would definitely find, if the box was large enough and the opening was small enough that they thought it was a good home, they would move in.
Okay. Now, and when you go capture a swarm, what equipment, how do you even go about that? I mean, you said they're very gentle, but do you bring special equipment?
I bring another hive box with me that's all screwed together, and I put a little screen on the front. I might take the screen off, and I'll look for the queen, so I'll pick up as many bees as I can. I'll drop them in.
You pick them up with your hands?
Yeah, I could pick them up with my hands. If I find the queen, I will pick her up individually.
Mm-hmm.
And put her in the box. And once her scent, her pheromone, is released, the other bees will follow her into the box. I'll leave the box there. And as twilight comes, all the bees will go into the box to be with the queen. Take a staple gun, staple a little piece of screen on the front, pick them up, go where I want to go.
Okay. Very cool. Now, how much honey do you... Because you said you could harvest 300 to 400.
Yeah, but I am going to leave a lot on the hives.
Okay.
Because, last winter was very cold. A lot of people had hives that starved. I know one beekeeper in Jersey, he said he lost 90% of his hives last year due to Verona mites, which is a parasite that lives on bees.
And are bees more susceptible when they don't? I mean, when they have adequate food supply, are they less susceptible to the mites, or is that not a factor?
No, everyone's hive has some mites. Their mites, they fall off on flowers, and your bee goes onto the flower, and the mite might get on your bee. Then when the mite goes back to the hive, it'll lay eggs inside an empty comb. And when the egg is laid by the queen in that comb, as it develops into a pupa, the mites will attach themselves and, like little vampire mites, they suck the blood out of the bee.
Right, yeah.
You have a lot of really fun bee facts about what goes into the flavor of honey and how many miles are flown.
It's like 55,000 miles of flight go into... a pound of honey, and I figured it out one day. And for a 5-gallon batch of mead, my bee has to fly to the moon, back into the moon. For one 5-gallon batch of mead, which is, to me, is actually amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when you look at the number of bees in a hive, and there's 100,000 bees, and 50,000 are gathering nectar, 50,000 bees, and they go out 5 times a day, they're only flying a quarter mile. Yeah. Quarter mile there, quarter mile back. Or maybe not even a quarter mile if you count the round trip.
So how many flowers? I mean, a lot of pollen goes into that one.
Well, it's actually the nectar. Pollen is baby food for the pupa.
So You would have to plant a lot of flowers, though, to be able to affect the flavor of your mead, though, correct?
Oh, correct. I mean, you'd have to have like an acre. Yeah. An acre of one flower.
That's crazy.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Bob Slanzi, a little bit more about beekeeping and honey harvesting, and then we're going to talk about how you can make your own mead at home.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. We support Heritage Radio Network because all you folks listening are so genuine, so dedicated to serious food, so much a part of what this country needs to strive to become. People like you are few and far between, and it's obvious to us at Fairway that we've got to stick together. Our desire is that the word gets out about Heritage Radio Network in its support for serious food, foodstuffs that offer memorability and timelessness, authenticity and rarefied quality. This country grew too fast to have established any degree of a heritage. Europe had centuries to develop one. America has not. Heritage Radio Network serves to hasten the evolution of a society that often appears coarse and uninterested. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're talking to Bob Slanzi about beekeeping and mead making. So let's, before we go move on to mead, about if somebody is interested in getting started with beekeeping, what actual time investment is it? I mean, I'm sure it varies week to week. And then about how much do you think it would cost to set up, one hive?
Okay. We're not talking about the classes or anything
right,
like that.
No,
just hive maintenance.
Just, yeah.
If you're going to go out to the backyard to put on your suit, whatever protection you want to do, gloves, veil, open up your hive, go down, inspect the frames. I usually go in. I can do a hive in 12 to 15 minutes.
And do you do this weekly, every other week?
I do it weekly during swarm season.
Okay.
Because I'm not the beekeeper whose bees are going to be down the street on someone's house.
So you have to be a little more adamant when it's swarm season.
I do it between 8 and 10 days. Some people will tell you I don't do that. You know, it's easy for other beekeepers in a rural place to tell you, oh, right, don't worry about it. But when you're an urban beekeeper, you don't want to be on a noose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then investment, you have to get your colony from somewhere and then your beehive. So
I believe betterbee.com. I think it's about $300. You can get started with a hive.
Okay.
Miller Bee Supply is another company. Brushy Mountain Bee Supply. Man Lake Bee Supply. You can look on all those sites and they will have all the equipment you need. They have starter kits. And, you know, by the time you do the class and just a basic thing, the extractor, if you're in New York City, I'm sure that you could find somebody who has an extractor. You can really do pretty well.
Excellent. So let's talk about mead. Now, how much honey did you get last year from your hives?
Last year, I got about 400 pounds off three hives.
Okay. And you make, absolutely beautiful mead. I've had a bunch of your, I judge Bess's show at Homebrew Alley, and then I've had a bunch of your meads before and since that. So what you're using a more modern technique called staggered nutrient addition.
Yes.
Mead making. So you're able to make an award-winning mead in about a month. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So let's go through the basic process. So mead is just fermented honey.
That's it.
Or honey wine.
And I'm going to tell you how I do it.
Okay.
I take 1 gallon of water, put it on the stove. I boil that gallon of water. When that water comes to a boil, I shut off the electric stove, take the honey I want to add it to the hot water, stir it. Put a lid on it, leave it for 30 minutes. That brings down temperature to about 140. That's where I want to kill any foreign bacteria in that honey.
Okay.
After that, I know it's going to sound really amateurish, but I put some ice in the bucket that I'm going to use. I dump that hot water in the bucket. I top it off to about 5.5 gallons with water. I rip open my packet of dry yeast. I dump it in, and I add my nutrients. I add a teaspoon of GoFirm. Then the Fermade K and the DAP, I mix about 3 teaspoons together.
Okay.
I add 1 teaspoon of the mixture. It's 2 teaspoons of Fermade K, 1 teaspoon of DAP. So I add 1 teaspoon the first day. I use a power drill with a plaster paddle. I mix it. I do it in a...
Explain that real quick. What is a plaster paddle?
A plaster paddle is just a... You go to the hardware store, a paint mixer paddle.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's basically paddle. You're oxygenating and, yes, and stirring oxygenating. Your mead.
And I do that. I use a 7.9-gallon pail for fermenting.
Okay.
And you're going to have to watch. When you degas and let that carbon dioxide is going to come right out. I was using a 6.5-gallon barrel. Releasing the carbon dioxide, it would overflow.
Oh.
So I moved to the bigger one because I don't like to clean the mess up.
Yeah.
You know, just to be honest.
Especially sticky honey.
Right.
Now, going back, about how much, for most of your meads, around how many pounds of honey are you using in a 5-gallon batch?
I really use about 3 pounds, between 2.5 to 3 pounds. All depends where I want
the
sweetness
level. Per gallon
of
water?
Yes.
Okay.
And all depends where I want the alcohol level to be with the sweetness level and the flavor. You know, there's a lot of balancing going on. With the flavors, and I'll do anything. You know what I mean? I'll make any flavor. I mean, peanut butter, seaweed, ghost pepper, which one, mm-hmm. and chocolate cherry, I believe you guys had.
Yeah.
The pina colada that
pina
you brought.
Pina colada, you know, and, you know, the tannins, the sweetness, the acid, the flavor, the honey flavor, everything has to be in balance, and I really believe that's a great mead. And looking around at the flavors, New York City's full of flavors.
Absolutely.
You know, Kostlustian's down on 28th Street in Lexington. You know, that's a great spice store. Mm-hmm. But really, go into your local bakery and look at the flavors. Like that chocolate cherry I made. I looked at a Black Forest cake and said, damn, I'd love to make that a mead. And I did. And, you know, that one scored number 3 at Homebrew Alley in the meads. You know, still 41, very respectable score.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I would do that recipe again. But look around you. We eat great stuff all the time. There's great bakeries around here.
Oh, yeah.
A pistachio and honey mead. I could see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
walnut
absolutely.
And honey. You know, what's stopping us?
Now, going back to the basic mead making. So the first day, you add a teaspoon of this mixture.
Yes.
And then how do you...
I oxygenate and degas every 12 hours for the first 5 days.
Okay.
Then
every 12 hours?
Every 12 hours.
Twice a day.
And are you adding more nutrients?
I add a half a teaspoon of the same mixture for the first 4 days. The first day I do the teaspoon, for the following 4 days, I put half a teaspoon of the mixture, and that's it.
Every time you degas?
Every time I... No. I do it once a day.
Per day.
Once
okay.
a day.
So you degas twice, but you dose nutrients once per
once.
Day.
Right.
Okay, awesome.
And that's it. And then I rack it into a 5-gallon carboy, and I'll taste it. And when I see it slowing down, I'll stop the fermentation. Now, if you stop the fermentation with potassium sorbate and metabisulfite, you're not going to stop an active fermentation. So let it slow down. You can't stop it. Accept what it's going to taste like, and then go back and back sweeten with your honey. And by back sweetening with the honey, I'm going to stop the fermentation. I'm going to put some water in a pan on the thing. On the stove, I'm going to heat it up. I'm going to drop the honey in again. I want to get to 140 again, and then I'm going to add that water and honey to my mead to get the sweetness level I desire.
Okay.
I don't take gravity readings. I do it all by palate. You know, look, I'm the one who's drinking it. I have to like it.
Right.
And if I don't like it, I'm not going to serve it.
Yeah. And so, not being on a commercial scale, it's not important what the alcohol content is.
No, I really don't care what it is. If I like it and the flavor's balanced, that's whatever it is. It's going to be.
And what yeast are you typically using?
I use Lavelin D47.
Okay, which is a white... Is that a white wine?
It's white wine yeast.
Okay.
Yep. It
dry?
Has about, it has a 12 to 14% alcohol
tolerance. Well, no, it's a
dry
yeast, yes.
But I add 15 pounds of honey, which will probably give me about a 14%. Mm-hmm. So I really don't go to a lot of back sweetening because, you know, my yeast really tops off with the honey in the mixture.
So you have some natural control
so
by using that yeast.
So I have a natural control by using the yeast.
Very cool. Now, when are you adding most of your flavorings? Does it vary depending on?
Like the chocolate cherry I made, I added 8 ounces of cocoa powder in the primary, so I had my chocolate. Then I went 9 pounds of cherries in the secondary.
So you added the cocoa when it was in the bucket,
yep.
And then you added the cherries after when you racked it to the carboy.
Yep.
Cocoa was in the same time as you're doing your staggered nutrients.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes, because the cocoa's going to all fall down anyway,
right.
And it's going to stay on the bottom. Then I had the cherries, and then when I smelled it afterwards, I said, I got the cherries in the nose, but I never got the cocoa.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I was at Whole Foods, and I saw Mass Brothers cocoa nibs, mm-hmm. and I said, well, there's my smell. So I added the cocoa nibs in the tertiary.
Okay.
And now I got the nose for the chocolate.
Yeah.
And you guys had it
and
after
you
that.
Did. Yeah.
And, you know, it all blended together very nice.
And I think when I had that, you were talking about how you thought that might be a good thing to throw into some barrels.
And I did get a couple barrels. Richie at Single Cut gave me a couple barrels. He gave me a sour barrel, two rum barrels, and a whiskey barrel. And I can't wait to play with them.
That's awesome. That's exciting. What do you think you're going to go with for that?
I would like to do that cherry chocolate in a rum barrel, and I would like to do a cherry vanilla in a rum barrel, and I would like to bring them to Grand Rapids, Michigan next year for NHC, because
yes.
Cherries are from Michigan.
There you go.
Some tart cherries. I think that would be great.
Absolutely. Now, how much? So do you only do 5-gallon batches?
Pretty much. I did a 3-gallon here and there. I'll do with varietal honey. I like to do a 3-gallon. I got some Butterbee honey from a guy named Eddie Varth, who's part of my club in Northeast New Jersey, and I was talking to another guy, Tim Schuler, who's going to get me some Pine Barren honey. I'm probably going to do a 3-gallon batch of that. And, you know, those varietal honeys I really like. And this Thursday, up in Burlington, Vermont, I'm giving a mead class to the Vermont Beekeepers Association. So I was promised a little High Meadow wildflower honey, which I can't wait to get.
That's exciting.
So now, when you're going to use these, especially like butterbean, we have a little bit of butterbean at home. Are you going to taste that honey first and then decide if you're going to flavor it or how you're going
to
flavor it?
Oh, I'm not flavoring that. I like
you're
to flavor
just gonna...
that. Yeah, that's going to be varietal honey.
Okay.
That's going to be varietal mead, traditional mead, and... that's what I'm going to put in as a traditional.
And then will you save a little bit to back sweeten just in case
just
it goes
case.
Too dry?
Well, I have 30 pounds, so I think a little bit to back sweeten will be fine.
One of my most educational mead experiences was actually a seminar at the NHC. We had a bunch of single variety honey meads, and then they gave us jars of honey and little tasters with which to back sweeten ourselves in doing that. And so it was really an awesome experience to really taste the different honeys. And how they are before being fermented, how they are back sweetening, you know, a dry mead, etc. Why isn't everything wildflower honey? I mean, how do you know that it's not a wildflower honey? If bees have to travel so far, I mean, how would you concentrate this?
Well because they're only traveling like a quarter, half mile, right?
Well, some of them can travel up to 5 miles. But,
okay,
but bees aren't like us. They're not going to say, "Hey, that's good over there." They're going to go to the closest honey source to take what they can get. And they're going to bring it back. You know, for them, it's survival.
Right.
So they're not worried about what's tasting the best. If you put sugar water out, they'll eat the sugar water if there's nothing else.
Yeah, because... Well, we were talking about it on the break.
That's kind of where I wanted to go
to.
Yeah, that's kind of why I'm bringing it up. Because one of the reasons I talked about, you know, being able to alter your honeys or how many flowers you might need. There was a situation a few years back where people were throwing out a lot of cranberries and honey was turning out red.
I remember that. And the honey came out red. And down in, I want to say it's North or South Carolina, there's actually a blue honey that comes out every once in a while. And then in France, there was actually at an M&M plant, some of the dyes for the candy coating of the M&Ms was somehow exposed. And the bees ate it. And, you know, they had M&M honey.
They had green honey, right?
They had green honey.
Because that's what was happening in here, is that there was the bees were eating from an artificial sugar source that was dyed red.
Yeah.
And so they were getting this crazy red honey.
Late July, early August is what we call the dearth. And there's really nothing in bloom. So bees go into survival mode and they'll take whatever it is. So if there's something that has sugar in it, they're going to go after it. Whether it's a Pepsi Cola plant, you know, anything.
Right.
Any source
sugar
of food.
Source.
Right.
Now, here's a question. So I know when I've bought honey before, they'll have like the spring honey or, you know, an autumn blend honey. Are there some, do some people harvest the honey at different times of the year?
Oh, yeah. I know beekeepers that harvest black locust, linden. I was just speaking to Harvey Sonny in Jersey this past weekend. He said he had basswood.
So they're harvesting right after the bees have... You know,
yes.
they know the bees have been feeding on this large population of,
right. In
of
certain parts,
blooming,
you know,
flowers.
I could, if I wanted to this year, I could have had blueberry honey, cranberry honey, you know, almond blossom. You know, 3/4 of the bees in the country go to do the almonds in California.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they come back and they go to blueberries and cranberries and, you know, there's apple blossom, there's orange blossom, there's that, you know, really anything you want.
So otherwise, if you wait till the end of the year, like, or the end of the season, like you do, most people do, then you'll just get kind of a generic wildflower.
You know, we get wildflower honey because, let's face it, I'm in Westchester. There's no fields full of alfalfa.
Right.
You know, there's no buckwheat.
Yet.
You know, just because the Italian guy down the street has a couple grapes, I'm not getting a grape, you know, the grape harvest.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Well, if you live in New York City and want to know more about honey, there is a honey festival on September 7th, actually out in the Rockaways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember all the specifics on it, but
it's NYC Honey Day in the Rockaways, and we'll put a link. Chris and I are going to be there. We're planning on going, and we'll definitely put a link on our website.
Might even have a couple flasks of short mead. Yeah. Find us.
Oh, and the other thing is, I'm actually speaking at the New York City Homebrewers Guild meeting tomorrow night on making short mead, which is a very fast, low alcohol mead, and other alternate fermentation. So water, kefir, whey fermented soda. So that's 7:30 p.m. at Burp Castle if you're interested in other fermentations besides.
We will be doing a short mead show here shortly too in the next coming month.
Exactly. So thank you so much, Bob. This was great.
Yeah, very. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Hopefully, some of you that are interested in beekeeping are inspired. Definitely go sign up for a class.
And this is really part one because we could talk about more.
Yeah,
more
I'll come
about
back.
Yeah, absolutely.
We come back right in the spring, and that way people can gear up, and
that sounds great.
We can go into a little bit farther.
Awesome. So stay tuned. So next week we have Raphael
Lyons.
Or Leon. We're not sure. We're finding out. It's Chris and I's notorious mispronunciation. From Enlightenment Wines, he makes some amazing meads and ciders and all kinds of interesting blends and has a CSA program to distribute. So next Monday night, live at 7 p.m. on Ferment About It.
Hey.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.